You have 10 minutes. I tried to imagine Alex pushing a stroller around the zoo, but the only way I could see him stepping foot in the place was if he was magically transformed into one of those vicious jungle cats they kept in locked enclosures. Look on the bright side, I said, attempting levity. I'm sure the zoo will still be there in 10 minutes unless the Smithsonian really pissed someone off. He stared at me, expressionless, but I could have sworn the temperature dropped 30 degrees. Right. I forgot Alex possessed roughly the same amount of humor as a rock. I gave him a quick overview of what happened with the fire. He knew all this already, but the recap provided an opportunity to gauge his reaction in person. He'd been oddly calm about the destruction of one of his most valuable properties. Granted, he wasn't exactly an emotive person, but I'd expected something. A strong rebuke, a sniper across my townhouse, hell, even a frown. He didn't give me any of that.
I see, he said after I finished.
The bitter residue of guilt lingered in my mouth, but it vaporized at his next words.
I looked into it.
The fire wasn't the result of a freak electrical accident. It was sabotage. Sabotage? The word detonated like an atomic bomb. Shockwaves rippled through the room, and I stared at Alex, sure he was joking if it weren't for the fact he didn't joke. Ever. What are you talking about?
My team investigated the fire since I can't trust those insurance idiots to produce a single ounce of competence, Alex said. The wiring was old, but it didn't explode by itself. Someone gave it a hand.
There was no one in there except me, Vuk, Willow, and the construction crew, I said. The crew members were thoroughly vetted by Harper.
No, it wouldn't have been one of them. Whoever did it snuck in before the workers arrived, shaved off the insulation on the remaining good wires, and repositioned them to maximize their chances of exposure.
Christ. It was like I'd gone to sleep and woke up in the middle of a Nate Reynolds movie.
Your team managed to ascertain all that from a burned-down vault?
Alex's smile didn't contain a single trace of warmth.
I hire the best.
If he was worried about the saboteur targeting another one of his buildings, he didn't show it.
Sabotage.
I turned the word and its implications over in my head. That doesn't make sense, I said. Who would want to sabotage the vault to the point of committing arson? The nightlife industry was cutthroat, but most of the players shied away from outright crimes unless they were in the mob. If they were in the mob, the type of establishment they ran was vastly different from mine. There was no threat there.
I have my fair share of enemies. So does Vuk. So do you.
Alex sounded bored, like we were discussing the weather instead of arson.
Hunting down the culprit will take time, but I will find them.
Finally, there it was, a speck of icy rage that belied Alex's outward composure. Whoever the culprit was, they were in for a world of pain once he tracked them down.
I don't have enemies, I said.
Competitors, sure. People that didn't like me, absolutely. But enemies? I wasn't in the mafia. I didn't have people who wanted to kill me or hurt the people close to me.
Everyone that's rich and in the public eye has enemies, even if they don't know it, Alex said.
He tapped his watch. It had been 10 minutes.
I'll take care of the saboteur. You take care of repairing the damage.
I'd forgotten about my impending decision regarding the club's future. I'd been too distracted by Sloane in this meeting with Alex. Kai had a point about my martyr act, but unless I discovered a way to freeze time, I would never get the club up and running by the deadline. I told Alex as much.
That bears no relevance to our situation, he said, checking his watch again. Were you not the one who told Markovic you'll get it done no matter what? If you say no, the club will still open. If I don't secure the vault, I'll find another location. It's not ideal, but business isn't always about the ideal. It's about getting things done, and I'll get it done with or without you.
I grimaced. It was eerie hearing my conversation with another person quoted back to me verbatim.
You wanted something of your own. Well, this is your chance, Alex said. Unless, of course, you lied and only started the club for your inheritance. If that's the case, I gravely misjudged you, and I do not like being wrong.
He
His green eyes glinted with warning. Make a decision by noon on January 1st. He stood and left me alone in his office, his words hanging like a guillotine ready to fall.
There was nothing like being reprimanded by a man who did not give one flying fuck about you to put things into perspective quickly. Alex may have been invested in the club, but he wasn't personally invested in me, and he'd cut straight to the heart of the matter. He was also right. The vault started as a necessity because of my inheritance, but it quickly became a passion project. I liked building a business. I loved the thrills, the challenges, and the creation of something that was mine. Was I really going to let an arbitrary deadline ruin that for me? I didn't need until January 1st to get my answer. I had it by the time I returned to New York later that day. However, I held off on telling Alex. I had another, much more urgent matter to attend to. My trial period with Sloan officially ended tomorrow, and I needed to get through to her before then. My meeting with Alex had preoccupied me enough to dull the pain of last night, but when Sloan's office building came into view, a gut-wrenching ache resurfaced.
I want to break up. You love me and I don't feel the same toward you.
The ache sharpened into a knife and twisted. Other men might have given up after being so thoroughly dismissed, and I would have had I thought she meant it. But the only thing worse than hearing those words come out of Sloane's mouth was seeing her face when she said them. Her anguish had mirrored mine, and I hated how much hurt she had to have experienced to be so afraid of love. Or maybe I was just fucking delusional. Either way, it wasn't over yet. There were minutes left until the buzzer, but I still had a chance to turn the tide and score a comeback victory. That shred of hope was the only thing that kept me going because the thought of losing Sloane, it's not going to happen. You won't lose her. I couldn't. Not when I'd just found her. Not when losing her meant losing a crucial piece of myself in the process. My heart pounded painfully as I entered the building, but anxiety melted into confusion when I arrived at Kensington PR and found Jillian and several junior publicists crowded outside Sloane's office, their ears literally pressed to the door. What?
Shh.
Jillian placed a finger over her mouth. Perry, she mouthed. Oh, fuck. I came up beside her and snuck a peek through the window. Sloane hadn't fully closed her blinds, revealing a glimpse of the drama unfolding inside. Perry Wilson, the gossip guru himself, gesticulated wildly. It was only the second time I'd seen him in person, and once again, I was struck by how ordinary he looked. Signature blonde highlights and pink bow tie aside, he could have passed for any random man I passed on the street. He couldn't be taller than 5'5 or 5'6, his scrawny frame squeezed into a blazer and jeans. For someone with so much bravado behind the keyboard, he was awfully small in person. His voice, however, was loud enough to bleed through the door. I know it was you! You're the one who planted those false tips for me! Sloane sat behind her desk, observing him with a bored expression.
Perry, darling, I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm a publicist with legitimate business concerns. I don't have time to engage in the type of subterfuge you're accusing me of.
She tapped her phone.
You're already being sued for libel. Don't add slander to the mix.
Perry's face turned the same color as his tie. I have eyes and ears everywhere, Sloane. They told me Tilly overheard you discussing the affair at the Russo's holiday party. Now Soraya's stupid minions have gotten me banned from social media, and that libel suit is bullshit.
Good. Then you shouldn't be concerned about it,
Sloane said.
As for your eyes and ears, perhaps they should have fact-checked for you before you uploaded that post. This is the 21st century, Perry. If you can't handle a 22-year-old and her fans, you might want to switch careers. I hear Fast and Furriness is looking for a new copywriter.
Perry quaked with indignation. You won't get away with this.
Please spare me the cliche villain lines,
Sloane sighed.
I have clients to attend to, and you have advertisers to appease before they all flee your sinking ship.
The blogger was so furious his voice dropped to near inaudible levels, and I only heard snippets with what he said next. Bitch, check in with your star client.
Not talking about the one you're fucking. Jillian and the other publicists scattered from the door. A minute later, Perry stormed out in a tornado of pink and cologne. Hey, man. I clapped my hand on his shoulder hard enough to make him stumble as he passed. Sorry to hear about your troubles. Good luck at Fast and Furriness. Perry squawked with outrage, but was smart enough not to confront me physically. He stomped toward the elevator, looking not unlike a child throwing a temper tantrum, and I couldn't believe this was the man who'd caused so many powerful people so much distress over the years. It was like peeking behind the curtain and seeing the real Wizard of Oz. Disappointing. Jillian giggled and didn't stop me when I walked into Sloane's office and closed the door behind me. With Perry gone, the stiffness eased from her shoulders, but they tightened again when she saw me. Sloane was obviously exhausted, but even with faint purple smudges beneath her eyes and lines of tension bracketing her mouth, she was the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen. It had nothing to do with her looks and everything to do with who she was. Smart, fierce, and so damn mine. I should have recognized it sooner, and I would wait forever until she did too.
So, Perry's really done, huh? I asked.
It was odd to talk about something as banal as Perry when the devastation from last night's conversation hadn't fully settled. The wreckage floated around us, each shard a silent reminder of what was at stake. However, jumping right into the reason I was here would be a surefire way to make Sloane shut down. I needed to ease into things, and honestly, I'd take any excuse to talk to her again, no matter the topic.
For now, but people like him always find a way to survive.
Sloane tapped her pen against her desk, her eyes wary.
We don't have a meeting scheduled for today.
No, we don't. Tap, tap, tap. The nervous rhythm mirrored the tension dripping in the air. It was so potent I could taste it in the back of my throat. And while I wanted nothing more than to grab her and kiss the hell out of her, I had to be smart about this. I had one last chance, and I wasn't going to fuck it up. Sloane's throat bobbed with a swallow.
Javier.
Don't worry. I didn't come to make a scene. I pushed my hands into my pockets and fisted them to keep myself from reaching for her. I came to tell you three things. One, I met with Alex this morning about the fire. He said it was sabotage. The tapping stopped. I could practically see the wheels in her head spinning as she processed this bit of information.
Sabotage? By who?
Still unclear. I summarized the meeting for her. It's Alex, so he'll figure it out and put in safeguards to ensure something similar doesn't happen again while I repair the club. Sloane stilled, her eyes flaring with surprise, and a wary hope that poured fresh fuel into mine. Hope meant she still cared, and if she still cared, that meant an infinitesimally larger chance of winning my upcoming gamble. That's the second thing, I said more quietly. I'm going ahead with the vault. You and Alex were both right, and I don't care if I pass the deadline and don't get my inheritance. That's no longer what the club is about. I just needed a kick in the ass to realize it. A sardonic smile crossed my mouth. Or two. Sloane's gaze flickered with another emotion I couldn't name before she slammed a steel gate over it.
Good. There's no use wasting the effort you've already put into it.
Final thing. I took a step closer. My eyes trained on hers. Our trial period doesn't end until tomorrow, which means we're not over yet. Not officially. Sloane's grip on her pen tightened.
I already made my decision.
It doesn't count when there's still time to change your mind. Her mouth quivered for a split second before flattening into a straight line.
Don't make this harder than it has to be.
Pain laced her voice, and that was enough to spur me on. I hated seeing her hurt, but if that meant I was getting through to her, I would bear it. I'll make it as hard as I can, I said fiercely. I love you, Sloane, and if you think I'm letting you go that easily, you're mistaken. I've spent half my life running from the hard stuff and taking the easy way out because I'd never wanted anything enough to work for it. I swallowed. Then I met you. And I finally understood what people meant when they said love is worth fighting for. I know it sounds like a cliche, and if you heard this is a movie, you'd probably write a scathing review about it. Sloane choked out a laugh. But I mean it. I've learned to fight for what's important, and there's nothing in this world that's more important to me than you. Not the club, not my inheritance, not my reputation. I took another step closer, desperate to touch her but knowing I couldn't. I know you're afraid, I said. Hell, I am too. I've never been in love, and I've never wanted to be in love. I have no idea what people do in these situations, which is probably why I'm here, making an ass of myself. A hint of self-deprecation slipped into my voice. If you truly don't feel anything for me, then I accept that, even if it kills me. But if you do, even the tiniest bit, then don't do what I used to do. Don't run away from what could be because you're afraid of what might be. It was blunt, but Sloane had always responded best to directness. It was one of the many things I loved about her. I won't lie and say I know what our future looks like. No one does. But I do know that whatever happens, we'll figure it out together, I said softly. We always do. Sloane didn't move, didn't speak, but her eyes shone with suspicious brightness. I took a deep breath and braced myself for what I was about to say. Tomorrow, top of the Empire State Building. Meet me at midnight. That was when our trial period officially expired. If you don't show, I swallowed past the glass shards in my throat. I'll know what your answer is, and I'll never mention this again. Sloane let out another watery-sounding laugh.
Are you sleepless and Seattling me?
Gossip Girl, actually. Doris was a big fan, I said with a fleeting smile. Then my face sobered, and my voice softened into something more tender. I know you think happily ever afters are unrealistic, Luna, but they don't have to be. You just have to believe in them enough for yourself. She didn't respond. I hadn't expected her to, but when I walked out, my heart knotted in my throat. I couldn't help but second-guess my strategy. I'd taken a huge gamble by giving Sloane an ultimatum. But we were the same in as many ways as we were different. She needed that push. I just hoped that in doing so, I hadn't made the worst mistake of my life.
Chapter 42. Sloane. I couldn't stop checking the time. It was 1 in the afternoon. There were 11 hours until my trial period with Javier expired, but the looming deadline killed my appetite as I pushed my salad around my plate. If you don't show up, I'll know what your answer is, and I'll never mention this again. The end of our relationship aside, what would happen if I didn't show up? Would we stop working together? Would I never see him again? Would the past 2 months disappear into the past like they'd never happened? I should be happy about that. That was what I wanted. But if that were the case, why did I feel nauseous? The few forkfuls I'd forced down earlier churned in my stomach. Cutting all ties with Javier would be the smartest thing to do. We couldn't return to our old working relationship when I knew how his lips tasted, and how he felt inside me, and how he held me like, "Hello, Earth to Sloane." Isabella waved her hand in front of my face, severing my spiraling thoughts. "Where are you?" "Sorry." I attempted another bite of food. It tasted like cardboard. "I was just thinking." "About tonight?" Alessandra's eyes gleamed with knowing concern. "Have you decided what you're going to do?" I usually grabbed takeout for lunch on workdays, but I'd asked my friends to meet me at a proper restaurant because I needed their advice. I'd filled them in on Javier's ultimatum, and their reactions had run the gamut. Isabella wanted me to meet him, no questions asked. Vivian said I should go with my heart, which wasn't helpful, because my heart had a habit of making terrible choices. Alessandra was surprisingly neutral, but out of everyone at the table, she understood how important it was to make a decision on my own time, not anyone else's. The problem was, I didn't have much time. I had hours at most. No. I flicked a piece of walnut to the side. I'd forgotten to tell the server not to include them in my salad. I didn't know what dishes you like best, so I ordered a bit of everything. None with walnuts, though. Unshed emotion crowded my throat. I hadn't cried since last night, and I hadn't told my friends about the tears. They weren't relevant. They were a physical symptom, that was all. I didn't let myself examine what they were a physical symptom of. I shouldn't go. I'm not going to go, I said with half-hearted conviction. Meeting him would be stupid, right? We'll break up eventually, and it's better to rip the band-aid off now than later down the road. Isabella frowned. Alessandra quietly cut her chicken, and Vivian took a sip of her water without meeting my gaze. Ugh, I loved my friends, but obviously they were biased. They were all disgustingly in love, and while they'd gotten their happily ever afters, they didn't count. They wanted to be in love, and they didn't self-sabotage just by virtue of who they were. I would never be the soft, loving type that did well in relationships, and I was perfectly happy being alone. Perfectly happy. I stabbed at a strawberry with so much force the plate wobbled. Anyway, enough about my dating life, I said. Did I tell you about Perry's visit to my office yesterday? He was fuming. I regaled the table with Perry's satisfying breakdown, and they made all the right noises of encouragement. But I could tell they were still stuck on my Javier dilemma. If I were honest, so was I. My voice petered out toward the end when I remembered what happened after Perry left. Javier had shown up, and my heart had slammed against my ribs like it was desperate to break free. I know you think happily ever afters are unrealistic, Luna, but they don't have to be. You just have to believe in them enough for yourself. My stomach roiled again, and I stood abruptly, startling my friends from their food. I'm going to the restroom, I said. I'll be right back. I ducked my head and speed-walked to the ladies' room. The farther I walked, the easier it was to breathe and block out memories of Javier. The warmth in his eyes, the rawness of his voice, the brief glimpse of his dimples after my sleepless in Seattle comment. The dining room chatter helped, too. There was nothing like a little white noise to repress unwanted thoughts. I'd chosen to meet my friends at Le Boudoir, which had cleaned up its reputation after a guest died at its soft opening last year. The coroners had ruled it a natural death, and the morbid event added a strange mystique to the restaurant, which bustled with surprising activity for this time of year. In one corner, Buffy Darlington reigned over a table of distinguished old money socialites. In another, Ayana sat with her date, a good-looking man with dark hair and an intense expression. They appeared to be having a heated discussion, so I didn't say hi. I wasn't in the mood for small talk anyway. I pushed open the door to the restroom and used the facilities. My skin was cold and clammy, but by the time I washed my hands and reapplied my lipstick, I'd gotten my nausea under control. Sort of. I checked my phone again. 10.5 hours. I swallowed the bile rising in my throat. That was plenty of time. Surely I'd... Sloane! My head snapped toward the door. I recognized that voice. And of all the people I didn't want to see now or ever, she ranked in the top 5. My stepmother walked toward me, wearing a Chanel tweed suit and the expression of someone who'd just swallowed a lemon whole. I wiped my face of any inner turmoil. Caroline. I'd never subscribed to the idea that women needed to visit the restroom in packs, but I wished one of my friends were with me, if only so I didn't get charged with aggravated assault for clawing Caroline's eyes out. She'd fired Rhea, kept Penn from seeing me, and was an all-around terrible human being. Given my current mood, she was lucky if I didn't stab her with my heel. Her own heels clacked against the tile floors as she came up beside me. She reached into her bag and fished out a lipstick. I didn't expect to see you here on a Tuesday afternoon, she said. reapplying the understated mauve color with precision. Aren't you supposed to be at that little job of yours? My little job happens to be one of the top PR firms in the country. I gave her a brittle smile. Not everyone marries up for money. Some of us are smart enough to earn it. How quaint. Caroline recapped her lipstick and dropped it in her purse. As much as I love hearing about your plebeian adventures, she wrinkled her nose, I have something else I'd like to discuss. I don't know where you can polish your horns. Perhaps you should Google demon services and go from there. She pursed her mouth. Honestly, Sloane, this is why you're better off working than trying to find a proper husband. No respectable man would tolerate such juvenile humor. It's a good thing I don't like respectable men, then. They have a habit of saying one thing and turning around and doing the opposite. Sometimes with your sister. Caroline's eyes narrowed at the Bentley reference, but she didn't take the bait. This is about Penelope, she said. And just like that, my snarky quips vanished. I hadn't gotten any updates about Pen since the one Javier gave me. I didn't want to give Caroline the satisfaction of begging for information, but my pulse beat a frantic rhythm while I waited for her next words. She hasn't been acting like herself lately, Caroline said after a pause. She barely eats, and her transition to a new nanny has been difficult. She's normally so well-behaved. How would you know? You barely talk to your own daughter. I bit back the stinging retort so I didn't alienate my stepmother when she was giving me firsthand insight into what had happened after Perry's bombshell post. The revelation that Penn wasn't eating concerned me, but I couldn't believe Caroline sounded shocked by the developments. She should know what the cause was. She misses Rhea, I said. Rhea has been with her since she was born. She's practically a mother to her, and you sent her away in the middle of the night without a word. Of course she's upset. Caroline tensed. I didn't think she cared about anything other than her clothes and social status. But I could have sworn I saw a flash of hurt at the mother comment. Yes, well, perhaps we were a bit hasty in our actions in that regard, she said stiffly. However, Rhea conspired with you to sneak visits to Penelope while George and I were gone. She's untrustworthy. And her actions couldn't go unpunished. Untrustworthy? I would have laughed had I not been so incensed. If you're worried about untrustworthiness, you should look to a few other people in your household. Yes, Rhea lied by omission, but she did that for Penn. You may be happy to keep your daughter at home and pretend she doesn't exist because she's not perfect enough for you, but she's a child. She needs someone that cares about her. And you just took away the one person in your household that fits the bill. Caroline's lips formed a thin slash of mauve. Be that as it may, you understood the gravity of the situation when you walked away and humiliated this family years ago. Because of you, the Kensington name will forever be tainted by scandal. No one in our world forgets estrangements, Sloane, and you chose to give up Penelope along with the rest of your privileges. You couldn't get past your pride then, and you dragged Rhea down with you now. You have no one to blame but yourself. The fact that you consider access to Penn a privilege, like she's a credit card or bank account, is exactly why you're not fit to parent her, I said, my voice quiet with fury. Oh, get off your sanctimonious high horse, Caroline sneered. If I weren't fit to parent her, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. Trust me. I have better uses of my time than chatting up my ex-stepdaughter in a restaurant bathroom. She took a deep breath before saying more calmly, As I mentioned, Penelope has been acting up. She's also been asking for you, incessantly. And contrary to what you think, I'm not a heartless monster. She's my only daughter. I do care about her wants and needs. I didn't buy the sudden loving mother act. Maybe Caroline cared a bit about Penn's wants and needs, but she cared about herself much more. So much so that you've ignored her since she was diagnosed with CFS, I said. I couldn't help it. I'd been dying to read Caroline the Riot Act for ages, and now that I had the chance, it was impossible for me to let it go. I must have hit a nerve, because her face instantly flushed red. "I haven't ignored her," she snapped. "I kept her at home to protect her. I hardly think she should be gallivanting around town with her condition, and you, of all people, should know how our world treats anyone they deem different or not good enough." Her mouth twisted. "Lord knows I had a difficult time after I married George. They wouldn't let me onto any good charity boards for years." "My condolences. I can't believe you survived such a terrible hardship. Make all the wisecracks you want, but this isn't about me or you," Caroline said through gritted teeth. "The only reason I'm even talking to you is because we've tried everything else to help Penelope, and it didn't work. We even had Georgia talk to her. Asking Georgia to make someone feel better is like asking a scorpion for a hug." To my surprise, my stepmother snorted in agreement. "I've never liked your sister. She always thought she was better than me." "She thinks she's better than everyone, and you never liked me either."
"No, but you're the only one who can get through to Penelope. This is more than your typical child's tantrum. If she continues acting the way she has, it'll have a serious impact on her health."
Caroline's gaze flitted around the bathroom. "George doesn't know I'm doing this yet, but I'm willing to make a deal. Penelope says she wants to see you, and I can make that happen if she gives up her hunger strike." My heart stumbled at the possibility of seeing Pen again without having to sneak around, but a part of me remained wary. "What's the catch?" Caroline wasn't altruistic enough to do this solely for Pen's benefit.
"So young, yet so cynical."
My stepmother produced a humorless smile.
"There's no catch. Believe it or not, not everyone is out to get you all the time. Keep an eye out for a message once I've talked to George. Until then, tell no one about this conversation."
The echo of her offer followed me back to the table, where my friends were finishing up their lunch.
"Is everything okay?" Vivian asked as I retook my seat. "You were gone for a while."
"Yes." I reached for my glass, desperate to alleviate the uncertainty clogging my throat. Javier, Caroline, Penn. It was too much all at once, and my head throbbed with an impending migraine.
"Everything's fine."
Chapter 43. Sloane. When it rained, it poured. Apparently, bad news didn't observe the holidays, because after I returned to the office, I'd gotten slammed with crisis after crisis. Jillian had checked into Perry's parting warning about Asher and found a video of Asher and Vincent Dubois getting into a fistfight. It hadn't hit the wider internet yet, and I'd spent a good 2 hours ensuring it never would. Once I put out that fire, I'd had to deal with panicked calls from a CEO who'd been caught banging a restaurant hostess in a bathroom stall, a movie star who'd been arrested for attacking a paparazzo, and a socialite who'd left her limited edition Dior bag somewhere between Paris and New York. I'd redirected her to her assistant. I didn't get paid enough to hunt down transatlantic luxury bag losses. It was my busiest workday of the year, and by the time I caught my breath, it was 10 at night. I'd sent Jillian home hours ago, so it was just me, a sad dinner of instant ramen, and the ominous countdown to midnight. 2.5 hours. I swallowed a mouthful of greasy noodles. My migraine had worsened since lunch, but that didn't stop me from doom-scrolling on social media to avoid thinking about Javier. Yesterday, his presence had filled the room. Today, the office felt empty without him, like a film stripped of its soul. 2 hours and 15 minutes. I gave up eating and tossed the remaining cold noodles in the trash. I'd finished my work, so why was I here instead of at home, enjoying a nice movie with a glass of wine? Because the Empire State Building is a 20-minute walk away. Because going home means you've made your choice. Because this is the last place you saw him, and you feel closer to him here than anywhere else. I groaned and dug the heels of my palms against my eyes. If only I had a magic eight ball to tell me what to do.
I'd always prided myself on my decisive nature. But when it came to Javier, I was a mess. He drove me up the wall sometimes, but he challenged me like no one else did. He pushed me outside my comfort zone while making me feel safe enough to do so. And he'd made me laugh, cry, and feel more than anyone else I'd ever met. Younger me had been convinced that what I'd had with Bentley was love. But it wasn't until Javier that I realized Bentley had been a mere prologue to the real story. Me and Javier, the most unlikely of couples, opposites in so many ways, yet similar in so many others. He knew every part of me intimately, mind, body, and heart, and he loved me not despite, but because of my flaws. We'd seen each other at our worst, yet we'd fallen in love anyway. A marble fist grabbed my chest and squeezed. There's no catch. Believe it or not, not everyone is out to get you all the time. Caroline's voice wormed its way into my consciousness. I never thought there'd be a day when she said anything helpful. But sitting there alone, in my dark office, while the man I loved waited for me minutes away, her words struck hard. There's no catch. I was afraid it'd hurt more if Javier and I broke up down the road, after I'd gotten more attached. But I was already in love with him, and it already hurt so much I couldn't think straight. I'd cried for the first time in my life, and I was eating instant ramen alone in my office at night, for Christ's sake. The same office where we'd met. The same office where he'd given me the ultimatum. The same office where I'd told Georgia the truth about Bentley. I thought I'd broken free of the hold Bentley's betrayal had on my decisions, but clearly I hadn't. I was still so afraid of getting hurt that I was willing to let a hypothetical scenario drive away the one man that I could see myself having a future with. Don't run away from what could be because you're afraid of what might be. If I were honest with myself, I knew we could work. Javier was the only one who got me, who fit into my life seamlessly, yet somehow made it better. And without him, all my days would be like this. Lonely, alone, and aching for something I could have had but let slip through my fingers. God, I'm an idiot, I breathed. My body made the decision a split second before my brain did. I grabbed my coat and rushed out the door before I'd truly processed what I was doing. I just knew that I had to get to the top of the Empire State Building, right now. Luckily, the late hour meant I didn't have to wait for the elevator to stop on every floor during the ride down. I had plenty of time to... The lights flickered once, and the elevator came to a shuddering halt. The panel display flashed to 4 and stayed there. You've got to be kidding me. In all my years of working in the building, I'd never once had an elevator issue. The universe must be punishing me for my earlier indecision because there was no freaking way this was a coincidence. I jabbed furiously at the lobby button again. Nothing. I checked my phone. No service. And it was down to the last 2%. I'd been so caught up with work that I'd forgotten to charge it. Damn it. My only remaining option was to press the emergency button and pray that 1, someone was on call this late at night during the holidays, and 2, help got here quickly. After a seemingly interminable wait, a gruff voice answered my call and promised me help was on the way. He didn't respond to my requests for an exact time estimate. I paced the tiny metal box and checked my watch again. 10:30 p.m. That was fine. Even if the rescue crew took an hour, I'd make it to the Empire State Building before midnight. God, I hoped it didn't take them an hour. Someone somewhere out there must have heard my prayers, because 2 technicians showed up 20 minutes later and got me out. I stayed just long enough to thank them before I was off again. 11:05 p.m. The late December air was a welcome breath of cold after the claustrophobia-inducing elevator. And I made it all the way to 34th Street, where the Empire State Building was located, before I came to a screeching halt. Metal barricades lined both sides of the street, preventing me from crossing. I'd seen them on my way here and assumed they'd end before I reached my destination. Clearly, I'd been wrong. I approached a nearby police officer and forced a polite smile. Hi, can you tell me what's going on? I gestured at the maddening makeshift fortress. I'm trying to get to the Empire State Building.
Annual snowflake parade.
The bored-looking officer jerked a thumb over his shoulder.
Whole avenue's shut down. If you want to go to the other side of the street, you gotta go around.
I stifled a groan. How had I forgotten about one of the city's worst traditions? I'd assumed the crowds were your typical tourists flocking to the city for the holidays, but no. It was a whole parade for a completely uninteresting natural phenomenon. Go around where? He told me, and I almost cursed out loud when I calculated how long it'd take me to reach the closest open cross street. The building was right there. I could see it glittering across the way, its spire piercing the night sky. It would take me at least 40 minutes to get there via the alternate route. Maybe more, considering the crowds. But I had no choice. The parade had started, and there was no way I'd make it over the barriers without being tackled by a member of NYPD's finest. Instead of wasting more time by arguing, I turned and booked it toward uptown. I wasn't a mathematician, but even I knew that 3-inch heels plus throngs of slow-moving, selfie-taking loiterers did not equal speed or comfort. When I reached the cross street, I was sweaty, frazzled, and wheezing for breath. New Year's resolution, do more cardio. Yoga and Pilates had not prepared me for trekking through the city in Manolo Blahniks. The other side of the avenue was equally as crowded, but at least I didn't have to clear an entire parade. Whoever came up with the concept of parades in general deserved to be shot. I elbowed my way past the crush of people. Halfway through, someone slammed into me so hard my teeth actually rattled. I looked up, ready to rip the guy a new one. Green eyes, brutally handsome face. He looked oddly familiar, enough so that it gave me pause, but he disappeared before I had the chance to say a single word. It was just as well. I didn't have time to get into it with a stranger, no matter how rude he'd been. 11:47 p.m. I picked up my speed and nearly knocked over a woman in a white snowflake hat. "Hey, watch it, Blondie!" she yelled. I ignored her. Cars, people, and shop windows blurred until I finally reached the Empire State Building's entrance. 11:55 p.m. I sped through the security process and prayed the elevator here, at least, worked properly. 11:58 p.m. The sleek glass lift whisked me up to the 86th floor. Up, 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 so fast my ears popped, and then I was there. Midnight. I spilled onto the outdoor observation deck, my skin drenched in sweat and my heart pounding hard enough to break my ribs. Normally, I'd be self-conscious about the way I looked right now, but that wasn't the most important thing. The most important thing was finding Javier. I scanned the deck. It was nearly empty, and for good reason. The heaters were no match against the wind, which whipped against exposed skin with vicious ferocity. And the cold was so biting, it gnawed through layers of wool and cashmere to burrow deep within my bones. My breaths formed tiny white puffs as I circled the outdoor space. My face was numb after one lap, but that didn't compare to the ice trickling through my veins after the second check. He wasn't here. He'd either left, or he'd never showed up at all. I stopped somewhere between the exit and the edge and stood there, shivering. I was so tired I was surprised my legs still worked, and the blanket of city lights beneath me took on a surreal quality, like scattered stardust waiting for a wish. If you don't show up, I'll know what your answer is. I'd gotten here exactly at midnight. If Javier had left after the hour, I would have seen him. Had he gotten held up or left early for an emergency? No. If he said he'd be here, he would. Unless he'd changed his mind. I didn't blame him. If I were him, I'd change my mind too, because why would anyone? Why would they? A sob racked the air. I'd never heard such a thing claw its way out of my throat, and it took me a minute to recognize the sound came from me. Once the first one escaped, the rest followed, and I could no more stop them than a sand wall could stop a tsunami. Sunday night, I'd cried silent tears. But there was nothing silent about these. They were guttural, chest-heaving sobs, the type that echoed across the deck and made the very air tremble with sympathy. They would have been humiliating had anyone seen me. But at this point, I didn't care. I'd fucked up my relationship with the only man I'd ever truly loved. And I had no one to blame but myself.
Luna.
Another sob shook my shoulders. I pressed a fist to my mouth, but the sound bled through anyway. And when I squeezed my eyes shut, I could feel the phantom of Javier's warmth brushing my back. It was worse than the cold because it wasn't real. It was my mind conjuring things to torture me.
Luna.
I needed to get out of here. If I stayed here for a second longer, I'd either freeze to death or lose my mind. But I couldn't bring myself to move. It's not him. It was a figment of my imagination, and firm hands grasped my arms, turning me around. And there he was, inky black hair falling carelessly over his forehead, full mouth sculpted with concern, eyes that carved a trail of warmth through my frozen tears as they examined me. He was still holding me. His body heat seeped through my clothes, and another set of shivers rippled down my spine, this time from warmth, not the cold. Perhaps my mind could evoke sounds and images and sensations, but it couldn't create this. The total, all-encompassing peace that I felt only when I was with him. Not a figment. He was real. I cried harder.
Hey.
Alarm brightened his gaze.
It's okay, don't cry.
He rubbed away one of my tears with a gentle thumb.
Shh, it's okay.
I thought you'd left, I hiccuped, embarrassed but too relieved to do anything about it. Understanding dawned on Javier's face.
There was an old couple here earlier. One of them fell, so I helped them downstairs. I sent you a message in case you showed up while I was gone.
My phone died, I hiccuped again. I forgot to charge it. Javier's voice hoarsened as he pulled me toward him.
I'm here, Luna. I didn't leave. I'm here.
His words should have reassured me, but they threw the floodgates wider. I buried my face in his chest as years of pent-up emotion poured out. Every fear, every frustration, every heartbreak. They'd waited a lifetime to break free, and once they did, they didn't stop until every last drop of moisture had evaporated and I sagged against Javier, emptied and exhausted. Throughout it all, he held me, even when I ruined what was probably a very expensive sweater and made a general mess of myself. I'm sorry, I said through a lingering sob. I wasn't the type for heartfelt speeches or flowery prose. And it was a testament to how well Javier knew me that he didn't need either of those things to understand what I was trying to say.
You don't have to apologize. I know.
His arms tightened around me.
All that matters is you're here.
I lifted my head, my heart aching as I looked at the man who'd always been there for me, in one way or another, since he entered my life. I love you, I said quietly. I'd said the words before, many years ago. But this time they felt different. This time they felt right. I'm sorry it took me so long to admit it. And I'm sorry for pushing you away. My voice dropped even lower. I'm scared. I liked structure and routine. My life was built around the safe harbor I'd constructed for myself since I broke up with Bentley. And what Javier and I had was completely uncharted waters. They could either take us to the greatest place we'd ever seen, or toss us over a 100-foot cliff with no life raft.
I am too. But that's what makes this worth it.
He pushed a stray lock of hair out of my eyes, his touch impossibly tender.
Life would be pretty boring if we knew what was going to happen every day.
I sniffled. Actually, that sounds wonderful. I would love that.
Well, you color coordinate your office supplies, so I'm not surprised.
My watery laugh chased away some of the heaviness. Smartass.
I'm guessing that's one of the things you love about me.
Javier gave me one of those crooked, dimpled smiles I loathed and adored so much.
And your dedication to making sure your green highlighters are always lined up to the left of the blue ones is one of the things I love about you.
He dipped his head, pressing his forehead against mine.
Love isn't about perfection, Luna. It's about imperfect people creating their own version of happily ever after. And while I don't know everything, I do know this. Every version of my happily ever after will always include some version of you.
Fresh tears welled in my throat. Oh, God. I'd spent 20-something years unable to cry, and now I couldn't stop. Javier leaned in to kiss me, but I pulled back in an uncharacteristic bout of self-consciousness. You don't want to kiss me right now. I'm a mess. I purposely avoided looking at my reflection in a nearby glass pane, but I knew what I'd find. Swollen eyes, red nose, mascara tracks running down my face, and hair matted with sweat. Not exactly kissing material. Javier framed my face with his hands, stilling me.
I always want to kiss you, and you're perfect exactly the way you are.
If he were anyone else, I wouldn't have believed him. But when his mouth touched mine, every other thought melted away. The wind, the half-dried tears, the fucking journey I took tonight to get here. None of that mattered as I twined my fingers through his hair and returned his kiss with abandon. Everything I'd gone through was worth it for this moment. And yeah, a couple kissing on the top of the Empire State Building after their big reconciliation was such a movie cliche. But like I said, sometimes the rom-coms got it right.
Chapter 44. Javier. When I re-entered the observation deck and saw Sloane standing there, my relief had been so all-consuming I couldn't move for a good 5 seconds. I'd waited there for hours, and there'd been a moment, many moments, when I thought she wouldn't show. I'd been convinced I'd fucked up by giving her an ultimatum, and that I'd ruined my chances of winning her back in the future. But by some miracle, she had showed, and that was all I needed to never let her go again. We didn't stay at the Empire State Building long. For one, it was way too fucking cold. For two, well, we had better things to do. Sloane and I stumbled into her apartment without taking our hands or mouths off one another. We knew each other's bodies so intimately, the buildup was almost thoughtless in its precision. A nip on the sensitive spot behind her left ear, a sliding caress from my stomach to chest and shoulders. Our clothes left a trail from her front door to her room, where I pushed her onto the bed and paused, taking a moment just to drink her in. Sloane stared up at me, her lips swollen from my attentions, and her eyes shining in a way that made my heart squeeze. I love you. 3 words, uttered countless times by countless people over the centuries. Yet coming from her, they had the power to bring me to my knees. I kissed her again, leisurely mapping a path from her mouth to her neck and shoulders. I took a prolonged detour to her breasts, where I grazed my teeth gently across her hard nipples. A shudder rolled through her body, and her moans became pleas as I licked and sucked and teased until she was begging me to fuck her.
Please,
Sloane gasped.
I need you inside me, Javier.
She whimpered again when I finally released her breasts to kiss my way down her stomach to her arousal. She was so damn wet for me that it made my mouth water. I wanted to touch her, taste her, fill her up. I wanted every single inch of her against every single inch of me. And I couldn't wait a second more. I dived in like a man starved, licking over and inside her, tasting her deeply. My fingers worked in tandem with my mouth, and when I ran my tongue over her needy little clit, her moan shot straight to my already aching cock. I sucked her tender flesh gently into my mouth before I flattened my tongue against her, letting her set the rhythm as her writhing took on a frenzied pace. She ground against my face, her hands tangled tight in my hair, her hips moving faster and faster until... Sloane let out a cry of protest when I pulled away. Not yet, sweetheart. I grabbed a condom from the top drawer of her nightstand, rolled it onto my cock, and lined the tip up with her entrance. I want to feel you come around me. She narrowed her eyes, her face flushed from exertion and her denied orgasm.
Then fuck me already.
Laughter rumbled through my chest, but it devolved into a groan when I gripped her hips and finally sank inside her. Christ! I swore I could feel every millimeter of her cunt as it took me to the hilt, and she was so tight and wet and perfect that I would never believe she wasn't made for me. Not when being inside her felt like sliding home after years of aimless wandering. I fucked her with long, slow strokes, giving her time to adjust and myself time to regain control before I picked up the pace. A squeal fell out of her mouth at the first hard thrust, followed by a breathy gasp when I found the exact angle that made her claw at my back with abandon. Her hips bucked up to match my rhythm, and the headboard slammed against the wall as I fucked us into a mess of sweat and cum. The slap of skin against skin, the sounds of Sloane's moans, the way her body shook from the force of my pounding. It was too much. I bit back another groan. I was about to come, but I'd be damned if I didn't take her with me. I kept my pace steady as my fingers found her clit. It was still swollen and sensitive from my earlier attentions, and I'd barely grazed it before her muscle stiffened and her pussy squeezed around me. Sloane's nails dug painful grooves in my skin as she came with a loud cry. I felt her contractions in every cell of my body, and it pulled my own climax forth in a powerful burst. I couldn't put a name to the sound I made if I tried, but my orgasm was so intense, so all-consuming, that my mind blanked for a full minute before reality slowly returned. I touched my forehead to hers, my chest heaving, and stayed inside her until every twitch and throb of my cock finally stilled. It was only with the utmost reluctance that I withdrew and disposed of my condom before I settled beside Sloane again. I curled an arm around her waist and brought her close, taking comfort in the steady rhythm of her breathing.
My neighbors are going to hate me,
she murmured. I laughed, pushing her hair back so I could admire every inch of her flushed, content face. Only because they're jealous.
Even 90-year-old Irma?
She sounded skeptical. Especially 90-year-old Irma. I paused. But if you ever want a third...
Javier!
Sloane shoved at my chest, her laugh mingling with mine.
You're terrible.
That's what you love about me.
It is.
She sighed.
I have questionable taste.
I would take offense to that if I weren't so confident in my good looks and dashing personality. I pressed my lips to hers. And if I didn't love you so much. Sloane's face softened. We sounded like one of those cheesy couples she loved to lambast in movies. But I didn't care. And judging by the way she pressed closer to me, neither did she. We didn't speak again before she drifted off. My eyes were getting heavy too, but I forced myself to stay awake a while later so I could soak in the moment. My arms around Sloane, her head against my shoulder, the rhythm of our breaths rising and falling in unison. And as my gaze traced the delicate fan of her lashes and the content curve of her lips, there was only one word running through my head. Mine. Chapter 45. Javier. Sloane and I spent the rest of the holidays in orgasmic bliss, interrupted only by the occasional food delivery and 23 minutes of a so-bad-it-was-almost-good movie involving feuding families, leprechauns, and a one-eyed dog named Toby. By the 24th minute, we'd abandoned the movie for more interesting activities. After the new year, though, we hit the ground running. She got caught up in the whirlwind of Ayana's engagement announcement,
and I threw myself into getting the vault repaired as quickly as possible without cutting corners. My birthday was no longer